Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. Kara Miller is sitting in for Marge Regan. A little bit of a change of pace here. We're going to pay tribute to an American pastime.
Welcome to your favorite drive-in theater and a sparkling new season. Watch our screen and local newspapers for all the fine shows coming this way. Show after show will feature the latest hits, the biggest stars for fun-filled, pleasure-packed evenings. Relax, come as you are, and spend an enjoyable night out with the entire family.
I'm on my way. We're talking about drive-ins, why they may be doomed, what folks are doing to save them. Here with us in Studio 3 to explain is film critic Garen Daly. He's also the director and producer, as you know, of the forthcoming documentary, The Orson Welles Complex. Hello again, Garen.
Hi, guys.
Hi. So it's interesting. I have never been to a drive-in movie.
You really?
Yeah, and I know there are still a few around, but I have to say, when I was growing up, there didn't see. There's some on the Cape, but we didn't go to the Cape.
No. Right. So
to me, it is what was in that clip, that sort of 1950s American graffiti. I mean, that sort of romance of something that's gone. But I guess they're not totally gone, although they are in danger.
Right. And I think that that's one of the reasons why they're still around is people love that nostalgia. And it's interesting, the arc of the business of what a drive-in was. When it first started out, or when it really started coming into its own in the 50s, as you were talking about, it was all about families having a cheap, entertaining night. They, you know, had playgrounds and petting zoos and all this kind of stuff, bringing families in there. Then in the 70s and 80s, as tastes changed and drive-ins went out of favor, they became places for exploitation movies. Everything from cheesy double features of sci-fi films to porno. And then they are now coming back to a family-oriented center where it is cheaper to go to a drive-in with a family of four or five because it's only like 20, 30 bucks for a carload than go to a regular movie theater.
And in that 50s, when you described that, I didn't know this till this morning, roughly a third of all screens in this country were drive-in screens. And now, according to a piece we all read today, there are roughly 350 of these left in the country. As we're talking to Garen, by the way, we'd love to hear your memories. What did drive-ins mean in your life, either today or when you were growing up? It's 877-301-8970. We're told that you had a personal experience.
No, this is going to get racy.
No, it's not going to get racy. It's actually kind of embarrassing. But, you know, I came from a very small town, and I came back after being away. I think it was first year of college, and I dated a girl 2 years younger than me. I mean, named Bunny Andruzzi, who was the pharmacist's daughter.
What was her name again? Bunny Andruzzi.
Bunny
okay.
Andruzzi.
Bunny, okay.
I mean, who named
her? What was her real name?
Bunny.
Bunny.
No, that was really her
what?
Real name.
Bunny.
That's what makes the story so
That's
good.
That's a mistake.
Yeah. So anyways, I hadn't been around for a while, and I said, let's go to a drive-in. And so we go to the drive-in, and it had gone porno since I had been away. So I'm bringing this 17-year-old girl, 16-year-old girl, to a porno drive-in. I'm embarrassed. She's into it.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the great lines in a story read this morning by this guy, Anthony Paletta, it says, drive-ins, for all their family friendliness, were regarded, likely with fair reason, as hothouses of immorality. I mean, that did change. It went from the family, well, I don't know where it went from, but part of the allure for a lot of young people, teens, was a place you could make out with your girlfriend or vice versa, right?
Rather than the back row of the theater, you would do it in the front row of your seat or your car.
And the threat that they're facing, and I was not aware of this. I mean, I understood that with suburbanization, obviously the value of the real estate is so dramatic that a lot of places can't afford it. But there's also the digitalization.
Right.
Well, explain that to people.
Well, I mean, what it has decided is the industry has decided they're going to save $1 billion a year by converting over to digital. That's the real motivation why all these movie theaters are moving over to digital. When it comes to drive-ins, they have to convert by the end of this year because there'll be no more 35-millimeter prints. It's the end of the road for 35-millimeter prints. So they can't show it. So they have to upgrade to digital. Now, most of the drive-ins are not part of chains. They're small independents. Mm-hmm. The conversion cost just for the projector is roughly $70,000.
And then you have to keep it, like, climate stabilized.
Exactly. And that's another $20,000 or $30,000. So roughly you're talking about $100,000 to convert over when these guys only have, what, maybe 5 months of the season.
So what does that mean? So if we have 357, according to this writer,
right,
as of the time he wrote, I think it was earlier this summer, post this deadline for digitalization, how many theaters are we going to have?
That is why there's a movement out. Honda, by the way, is doing this big program now called Save the American Drive-In, and there's a website that will be on your website to let people know where they can go. The industry has responded in some ways. There's a company called Cinedigm, which is working with the industry group that is helping the transition, and they're going to fund about 100 conversions. But that still leaves about 250 that are still up in the air. Some of them, like the Skowhegan in Maine, is trying to do a fundraiser, but they've been doing a fundraiser now for 2 weeks, and they've got $385.
You want to understand about this, and we're talking to Garen Daly about the threats to drive-ins, and we'd love to talk to you about the role that drive-ins played in your life at 877-301-8970. We'll get to your calls in a second. The Wellfleet drive-in, which I went to a drive-in when I was a teenager outside Philadelphia. I think I did. But I know I've been to a drive-in when my kids were young in Wellfleet for all those reasons. What Wellfleet has done, which I assume they all should do or will do, or I'm surprised they haven't done, is they're sort of multitasking entities. There's a miniature golf course there. On weekends during the day, maybe even all day, for 7 days a week during the summer season, there's a flea market. So essentially, you get to use the real estate in a number of ways. Isn't that sort of diversification one of the ways these places can survive?
It is one of the ways, but again, it depends on your population density. The nice thing about Wellfleet is it's at the tip of the Cape, and so there's tons and tons of people there in the summer, which is their season. In the winter, it's a whole different story.
Do any drive-ins operate in the winter?
No, very few. I mean, unless you're in a warm climate.
And it's not just a question of real estate in the suburbs got more expensive, which priced the drive-in movie theaters out, which is true. But I also feel like people now have huge TVs in their living room. You know, you talked about, it's cheaper than going to a movie to have $20-$30 for a carload of people. Well, yeah, but I'll give you something else that's even cheaper. Getting a Netflix movie, you know, and sitting on your couch with the entire family. And a lot of people now have these huge screen TVs and pretty nice home theater systems. Hasn't that partially competed with the drive-in movie too? And like, if you're taking the family out?
Yeah, but that's also competing with all the theaters right now. That's why everyone has to. So you have to come up with different ways. You have to become better showmen.
Well, so IMAX and 3D, you can't, you know, that's harder to do at home, although.
Right. But again, the entire industry is facing a very crucial period of time. The drive-ins happen to be right now one of the striking points because they are literally threatened with extinction.
Have you been to a drive-in as an adult? We know about you and Bunny. We've heard about that now.
Yes, I have.
You have? And where did you go?
I went to the Milford Drive-In in New Hampshire.
And how was that?
It was all right. I mean, one of the problems you have with the drive-ins is you don't have really high-quality sound. And that's always an issue.
They still hook the little things to the windows
in
the car?
No, now you can do it through your FM in your car.
Oh, you can really?
So you can get some stereo separation there. But it needs still to be better. I mean, there are technology. But I think if enough of the theaters can switch to digital, they can start sending that digital signal out to the cars a lot better, and you get better sound.
We're going to get calls in a minute, but a couple more questions about New England. Let's just take Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, for example. I don't need a precise number, but of the 357 that still exist, roughly how many do we have in our region?
We have about 15.
15 in those.
And that's not too bad for New England, I'm talking New England.
Mm-hmm. We've talked on the show before about Kickstarter, the crowdfunding website, which a lot of people go on to fund their project or they're, you know, actually building some contraption, some watch or something that they want you to fund. How likely is it that something where many, many people, hundreds or thousands of people say, I want drive-ins to live. I want them to continue. I love the Wellfleet drive-in, let's say. How likely is it that something like that is going to be the Superman here that saves some of these drive-ins?
Well, I would hope that that happens a lot. And I think that's what Honda's trying to do with their program. The problem is, as I see it, when I look at the Skowhegan, which is one of the theaters that is doing that, and they've raised $385 in 2 weeks, the process of doing a crowdfunder is incredibly labor-intensive. So that's a real issue. And I don't think that these smaller operators understand the mechanism to make it work. Now, interestingly, on the 23rd of September, the crowdfunding shifts into a new phase where you can now invest in these crowdfunders rather than just doing something along the lines of like getting a T-shirt.
Let's take a couple of calls about your drive-in experiences, as best you can tell them on the radio. Let's go to Nathan in Boston with Karen Miller, Jim Browdy, and Garen Daly. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. Thanks for the call. What's up?
Well, first, I just want to say I love the show.
Thanks.
But I'm probably one of your younger callers who would have gone to a drive-in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 18, when I was a senior in high school, every Wednesday, me and my friends would go to the drive-in theater, and we'd just get out all our blankets. You could bring your own food, which is great, because that's where they really kill you at the movie mm-hmm. theaters. And it was just, it was more an experience than it was about the movies.
You know, Nathan, I'm so glad you said that, because I thought a minute ago, I lost the thought, and thanks for the call. I'm 6'5" tall. I don't fit in any seats at Fenway. The reason I go to Fenway is for the experience of being at Fenway. And so the reason people go to drive-ins, as Nathan described beautifully, is because of the feel of the thing. There is a certain something that you don't get at the huge screen on your wall in your living room or in a movie theater, right?
Well, and part of that is the community. The community that you get to see, and you get to meet people, and you go there early, and you're playing frisbee.
It's like a tailgating kind of experience.
It's like a tailgating party, and you bring all your friends, and it's like, it's a gas.
It's an event. It's, you know, Shakespeare on the Common actually is a lot like that. People bring picnics, and they put them out, and you can kind of see, and you're kind of behind a tree, but it's fun.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Let's go to Paul in Burlington. You're on with Garen Daly. We're talking about drive-ins. Hi, Paul.
I love them. They were the best time of my life. My mom and I used to go in the 35, the 60s. As soon as I got my license, my dates were always at the drive-ins. And I lived in Somerville. And we had two of them. We had the MGM on one side and the Meadow Glen Mall on the other side. And you actually just drove up and down the main railway there. And you could pick which two you're going to see, and they're all four, because you got two. You had two shows for, $3. And later on, we had $5 a car loan. And I agree with everybody else about the experience. You brought your own popcorn. You brought your own food. You sat around in your car. And the MGM did have the shows at night. They had it during the wintertime. I mean, they had heaters that you could put in your car, and it only cost you a couple other bucks. So with that microphone that you got brought in, or the speaker that came in, you also had a heater that came in.
Paul, we can hear the smile in your voice through the radio.
Paul sounds ready to start
call,
the Kickstarter campaign.
Let's try one more. Nick, you're in Peabody. You're on with Garen Daly. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
I was listening, and I used to go to that drive-thru in Milford you were talking about mm-hmm. before. I went to a private school up in Wilton, and that was the go-to spot for all the kids. I loved it because it was a great chance for all of us to get together, all us underagers, get some alcohol, get some other things that we weren't supposed to be doing. You know, you'd be smoking cigarettes, and after a while, you'd roll up the windows and...
Listen to laughter in this guy's voice. These are incredible. Hey, Nick, thank you for the call. So what's your sense? You talk about this crowdfunding effort. You talk about the Honda campaign. It's 5 years from now. What's the drive-in look like?
I think we're going to lose one-third of the theaters that are out there right now. I think we're going to hold on to about 200 or so. But there's going to be a couple of new trends that are emerging. One is called pop-up drive-ins. And these are drive-ins that are in urban areas. In fact, the Harvard Square Business Association is doing this, where they close off Palmer Street and create an outdoor theater going out there.
We have seen just pop-up stores, right, and pop-up restaurants. Right. That's been like a craze over the last couple of years. I've been to a couple of them.
And I've been talking with some people who are planning stages of doing a pop-up drive-in series in Boston next summer.
It's going to be like a specialized commodity thing. Yeah.
Right. Well, let me just be clear. We only have 15 seconds left. So what, are they projected onto a wall? Do they erect a screen?
There are inflatable screens, and you just project it with a Blu-ray DVD player.
I love
That's awesome. I'm going to have the chance yet to go to a drive-in. I'm very excited.
Can you believe
but you won't have a concession? The concession is part of the joy.
Okay. Well, I'll go somewhere really overpriced beforehand.
And the hamburgers are terrible.
And you play miniature golf during intermission between the two movies.
And SWAT beat mosquitoes.
Garen, thank you. That's another point we didn't get into. That's a huge problem with drive-ins. Garen Daly's film critic, director, and producer of the forthcoming documentary, The Orson Welles Project. Garen, it's great to see you.
My pleasure.
Thanks to all of you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tomorrow, open mic with Charlie Baker. Remember, Charlie Baker said he will announce his decision by Labor Day, right, as to whether or not he is running for governor. Tomorrow's the last Tuesday before Labor Day. In the Great Boston Molasses Flood of 1919, and why the adage, slow as molasses, didn't apply. It was a pleasure, Kara.
Thank you very much. It was great being here.
Marjorie Egan will be back tomorrow. I am Jim Browdy. Our show is a production of WGBH.